You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we can be heard all over the world on the World Wide Web. My friend Samantha and I are here, and we just got on live radio. So, Samantha, we're getting ready. Paul is going to tell our listeners how they can tune in online to listen to our show, not just today, but every day.
Absolutely. That would be at 1510, that's 1510, WWBC.com. You can tune in there. You can listen anywhere around the world there. You can download the app, too, the WWBC app. You can download the app and listen to all of our wonderful programming throughout the week.
That's right. So for listeners who are just tuning in, Samantha Nazario is here. She is co-hosting with us, with me today, Ellen O'Neill is taking the day off. Oh, Ellen Little. She said, don't say the O'Neill anymore, right? She's taking the day off. And Paul is here. He's running the board for us. We have an action-packed show today. But before we go to our guests, we have two guests who are actually calling in today. The first one is a gentleman who's calling in from L.A., and his name is Lance Hilsinger. And so he's going to be talking with us a little bit. He's an author, and he's also a social worker. He's going to be talking with us a little bit about the welfare and juvenile court system, some changes, what he thinks can be done to make it better for children in the system. And he's going to be talking about his new book, To Build a Better Bridge. That's coming out soon. And then Samantha, on the second segment, we have a woman, Sherry Singh, who's calling in to speak about autism. And you read about her last night.
Yes. It's awesome. And I have a lot of experience with children on the spectrum, so I'm really excited about that.
So before we go to Lance, who's already called in and on hold, Samantha, Ellen, and I are here every Monday. This studio, we are very fortunate to have this studio where we can have freedom of speech.
Yes.
And freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And it's great that Paul gives us a place where we can come and just chat every Monday in an unscripted manner and give out valuable information to our listeners. And it's quite educational, don't you think, Paul?
Absolutely.
And you write down all the educational shows.
I write them down and turn them into the FCC every quarter.
So FCC, you heard that?
Nice,
so,
big
anyways,
words.
So 4th of July, what did you do yesterday?
Yesterday I was on the committee for the annual 4th of July parade hosted by the American Legion Post 163. And I was gifted with the task of bringing diversity. And I thought it was amazing to see Melbourne lead as an example to the rest of the world how we move forward by coming together.
That's wonderful. And I worked in the nursing home. I took care of my patients, and we chatted about 4th of July. And you know what? I volunteer to work on the holidays because I enjoy spending the day with the patients and speaking with them. And I hear their stories about how they celebrated 4th of July. And a lot of them still remember going to their parks, their local parks. They remember their parents. Some of them are from New York, New Jersey, California, like our guest. And we chatted a little bit. And so then I went home and we got invited to four parties. But my husband said, you know what? It's 5 o'clock by the time I get home. And he's a vegetarian. He doesn't feel like sitting down around a pool with complete strangers, watching his wife market her radio show and talk to people. And so he goes, you know what? I'm just going to stay home. And he made me an Impossible Burger. Mm-hmm. And we ate. We had a great 4th of July. And here I am with our show. So Lance Hilsinger, thank you for calling in.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how was your 4th of July?
Very quiet here on the West Coast. We have a drought, so fireworks are very restricted.
Yes. So you just stayed home and did your thing?
Just watched the fireworks on television with my wife and eldest daughter.
Yeah, I did that too. I was amazed. I really loved the way they were showing the split screen with the musicians And then they showed you what was going on in New York and Philadelphia. And I think I saw a little bit of California, too. And I felt like America is back. And I felt peaceful. And I felt like the world was in good hands. But then this morning, I went to the gym and I was talking to this lady. And she's like, so President Biden didn't meet his goal of vaccinating 70% of the population by 4th of July. So I said to her, I said, listen, the information is out there. He's doing his best to tell people if you want a shot in your arm, you can get it. But it's up to people to take it. And if they don't want it, that's their right. We can't force them. But you can't blame the president either if people decided they don't want to take a shot. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's quite right. You know, the holidays like July 4th are very family-centered. For kids in foster care, that can be very awkward, especially if they just came into the foster home in the last few days. And then, of course, visitation. Very often children want to, foster kids don't want to visit home. Their parents won't want them home for the holidays. The foster parents might have plans for going out of town. And that could be one of the issues that's a challenge for social workers, is that
having the conversation.
Trying to please everyone, yes.
That's right, because that's what I said to the lady. I said, listen, you can't blame the president when people prefer to eat a hot dog and hamburger and not ask any questions about what's in it, but they question what's in the COVID-19 vaccine. And I said, did you have a hot dog yesterday? And she says, yeah, I had two or three. And I said, did you ever question the FDA what's in it? And she said, no. I said, you trust them? She said, of course. I said, and you don't trust them about the vaccine? And she just looked at me and I said, I'm finished working out. I'll see you. But anyways.
You like to leave people speechless all the time.
Yeah, I do.
With education.
I do. But you know what I do? I try to reason with people. Like, you know what? This is a reasonable conversation. And she's a nice woman. And she's concerned why 70% of the people are not vaccinated. Well, guess what? There's a reason. Right?
Personal responsibility at
That's
this point.
That's right. So Lance, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Samantha was going to read out your bio, but I figured you could tell us a little bit about yourself and all the great things you're doing for 34 years as a social worker in California.
Well, yes. I started as a social worker with Los Angeles County, was there for 5 years, and then I'm now retired from San Luis Obispo County, and San Luis Obispo County is just north of Santa Barbara. And most of my assignment in child welfare was in what we colloquially call as a court unit, or bureaucratically it's called the dependency investigation unit. And that's social workers charged with writing the reports that bring the child into the court system, explain to the judge what's going on, and make recommendations of what should happen. In California, social workers file the petition. That's a legal document that's says this is why the child should come in the court. In most other states, it's an attorney. So it's a very, very involved court process. And you, of course, you have the challenge balancing child's rights, parents' rights, and the code sections. You have to follow law, of course. And the law has changed quite a bit over my career, and it's largely changed for the better.
Well, that's good to hear. We always like when things are changing for
the
better,
better,
right?
Absolutely.
So, So Lance, you wrote a book called Build a Better Bridge. Is that focused primarily on your experience being a social worker with foster children?
No. Build a Better Bridge, if you're in the child welfare system, you get to know the larger welfare system, AFDC, food stamps, AFDC, which is now called TANF, and you really see how the social welfare programs that had their beginning in the war on poverty in the 60s, they have changed as well, but I also think that some ways they haven't changed. For instance, food stamps. Food stamps is based upon household income and the number of people in household. Well, guess what? Teenage boys eat a lot.
Yes, they do.
And they eat a lot more than others, so maybe that we need to adjust the foster stamp allotment to take into account, when there's teenagers in the home. Those kinds of things. And also talk about how, I draw an analogy with build bridging. When the government builds a bridge, it says, okay, we're going to build this $10 million bridge, but it's going to only last 20 years. But if we spend $20 million, we're going to 60 bridge in the last 60 years. And I say, well, okay, using that analogy, what can we do to help the government? Where's the most cost effective for taxpayers' dollars to go? And social welfare programs lift people out of poverty or keep people out of abject poverty, but they don't really get people out of poverty. They live just a very subsistence living. And so tax code changes and other things that need to be done to help just have a better world here.
Yeah.
And without... go ahead.
We've spoken about this topic so many times on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, which is the name of our show, and I forgot to say it earlier, about living paycheck to paycheck. And some of these people just don't have that luxury about paycheck to paycheck. They're just living from, you know, whatever assistance
day-to-day.
They can get, day-to-day assistance.
That's correct. You know, a lot of people, and then when they hit retirement age, a lot of people who've been working modest wages, they have very, very little for savings. The average
if
balance
any.
In a savings account is just $7,000.
Lance?
So people are not able to save. In my new book, Build a Better Bridge, Social Welfare for the 21st Century, I argue that we should have retirement programs beyond the 401k, beyond the IRAs, something that's just for people who are just living from paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
Absolutely.
So when they're no longer, you know, something to supplement Social Security.
That's right.
Lance, I have a question for you, my dear. Do the children that you help as a social worker actually have a say as to where they get to stay or live?
Yes, we listen to the child. That their opinion is not controlling. But we listen to that. And one of the changes in the system is that we have team decision-making meetings now. And very often for old children, they've been in the meetings with the parents, the grandparents, other professionals involved with the family. And we talk about placement issues and short-term and long-term. And so the child participates in that. But we don't put the child, as I tell, we don't make 10-year-olds judges either.
Yeah. So what is that's great to know that that it's like a team effort to do what's best for the child. I like that. Does the parents also have a say in where the child live at all?
Yes. Oh, we very much ask them, where would you like your child placed? If the circumstances are such that you're going to jail or you're going to a residential treatment program, very much the preference is to placement with family. Sometimes there's conflicts between the parents and the family, and sometimes parents are reluctant to let us know which relatives are really the ones. There might be some issues there between the relatives, but what we look at that, again, it's nothing absolutely. The mother doesn't say, my aunt, my child could be placed with so-and-so, and it's not a guarantee, but we listen to that. The other thing is that we also have to check the grandparents or the other relatives' home. We have record checks, child abuse checks, a physical check of the home. So those things, those obstacles have to be taken into account too.
Right, and you can't be pressured either, because some children would want to live with a relative who probably gives them a lot of free time, don't expect too much from homework, not a disciplinarian. I mean, I have seen that not just with the social worker system, but just by listening to people that I work with and people that I speak with. You know, they'll say, well, my child or my niece or a relative wants to go live with a certain person. But then when you look at it, that person is not actually doing what's best for the child. And I'm sure you hear that as well with children.
It's not that common, really. But I do recall a case where I had a teenage boy he wanted to live with his 21, 22-year-old something cousin, and everyone said, no, not with that cousin.
Yeah.
That cousin's involved with drugs, you know. So we do listen to the child, but again, we don't want to be manipulated either.
Right. So for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends this morning, we're speaking with our friend Lance Hilsinger, and you're calling in from California, am I correct?
Yes, at San Luis Obispo, California.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Amazing.
Yes.
Lance, what did you hope to accomplish by writing your book highlighting the child protective services and the changes that are needed?
Well, the title of the book is In Place of the Parent, Inside Child Protective Services. And while the title is somewhat has a tell-all label to it, it really, my goal was threefold. One, I wanted to let people know what the system was about, how it has changed. Two, I wanted to keep the system from becoming more or more bureaucratic. In the last few years of my career, I felt like I was spending far much time in front of a computer screen instead of in front of people. And then I wanted very much to hope that some people would become foster parents, especially with the pandemic. The system just needs foster parents. And it makes it so much easier if we have options. But too often, as I talk in my book, too often there was just an option of one. That was the only place I had a place to take a child. And we'd like to have a situation where we have, you wouldn't want to go in a restaurant where you can only order one thing. We want to have lots of foster parents. We have good options for children.
That's right. So we all know that having children doesn't come with a handbook. And, you know, you could prepare, some people prepare and the plan and the children come into the world and they've got a home and money in the bank and a college plan and loving parents and a great environment, and some don't because they're not planned, and the parents are going to have a difficult time raising these children. But what are some of the common reasons for a child to be placed out of their home? And, you know, what do you see is the most common?
Well, far and away, the most common is neglect due to substance abuse. That is the most common reason. Substance abuse.
You know, I've always said that when a woman gives birth to a child in the hospital, they should be leaving that hospital with a form, and that form should have a few questions. How do you plan to care for this child? Do you have a job? Do you have a network? Do you have a support system? Are you registered to vote? What are some of the things that are important to you to raise this child? And I think if you get people to start thinking about this beautiful life that they brought into the world, just maybe people would start thinking about these children when they leave the hospital. Because we've seen like so many people that give birth and don't care, and then they go back and get pregnant a second time. And then it goes into the bigger issue of birth control and comprehensive sex education, you know, at appropriate ages. Do you see a lot of people that have children and repeat this process over and over again?
Yes, I think that certainly does happen. While you were talking there, I was thinking that of some academic paper I read years ago, that if the father's present and if he cuts the cord, he is far more likely to be an involved parent.
That is
and
so true.
We talk a lot about mothers, and properly so, but also with the fathers involved. And I think that the system has gotten better about notifying fathers and getting them respecting their rights. It, of course, takes two to have a child. Lots of people have unplanned children, and that's certainly not a crime. But sometimes people, they take left turns in life. They start using drugs to go over to deal with their stress, or to escape life, or just for a thrill. And then they sometimes get angry at the world, and they take it out on their significant other or their child. And other people, sometimes kids come into the system because their parents have severe mental health problems.
Yes.
You took the next question right out of my mouth. Yeah, I was going to say, does the substance abuse come hand in hand with the mental illness?
And you know, you are absolutely correct, because my parents had 18 children combined, two wives, and I was an unplanned pregnancy. But
same
you know
here.
What? But you know what I say? You know, we are blessed to have the ability to read and write, and of course now we have Google. There's so much information available for young people to protect themselves and have children at a time when they can actually afford one. But of course, that's a different show and a different time.
Yes, it is.
You know,
I do talk about that in my second book, Building a Better Bridge, because the college age average woman with a college education will have just slightly less than two children in her lifetime, but a woman with a high school education, it's much higher, and that has ramifications for our society.
Long-lasting ramifications.
You know, go ahead.
long-lasting ramifications, right, Lance?
Right, yeah. Right. And you know, and then this conversation here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, could we could talk forever, Lance, because then it goes into the pro-life, pro-choice movement as well, because there's so many people that absolutely loves seeing a pregnant woman and knowing that a life is coming into the world. But then the minute that baby is born and the people needs assistance, like you said, to increase the food stamps, an affordable home, an education, a trade, the parents need a good job, then people say, well, wait a minute, you and that baby and everybody else in the family go get a job.
And it can't be both ways. You
know, even the little baby, to put that baby to work too, which I have nothing against able-bodied people working and paying their fair share. But you can't have it both ways by saying you appreciate people bringing children into the world because you're pro-life, but then you pull the funding sources from people as well, you know?
Exactly. Lance, we have a question for you here today. Someone just texted us. How has the child welfare juvenile court system changed over your career?
Well, it's changed in many ways. The federal government has set certain standards that child welfare states are supposed to follow. For instance, if for every 1,000 children that are mistreated, what percentage are mistreated a second time? You know, of course, you want that number to be very, very low. How often do children in foster care move more than twice? Those standards, the details of the standards are revised from time to time, but the federal government now has set those standards and sort of as goals of what the agency should do. The other thing that has happened is that because in certain circumstances foster children can be considered homeless children, federal legislation regarding homeless children has affected child welfare. There's education liaisons. There's supposed to be better coordination between child welfare and the education system. And that one very interesting thing, normally you have to, we talked about immunizations, normally you have to show immunization card to get your child enrolled in school. Well, when child enters foster care, that card could very well be in an evidence locker at the jail when the mother's booked. And so that information's not available right away. Well, the federal government now says for foster kids, you can't hold the child's education up for the immunization card, immunization record.
Yeah, that's
possible. Wow, that's big.
That's a good thing.
Or the birth certificate.
So, Mr. Lance Hilsinger, tell us, what can we do as human beings on this earthly journey called life to get more people to care and actually vote for politicians or people in their community that would actually not think about their own lives, but the lives of the foster children, the people who have mental health issues, the folks who are having a hard time making ends meet, and so they have to give up their precious children to the foster care system. What can we do as human beings to make this a better place for all?
Well, that's a big question. you know, I don't know. I think lots of people would like the answer to that. I think that one thing is, I hope some of your listeners will do the small, not a small step, but help by becoming a foster parent. It's a lot talked about, you know, I'd like the system to be better. But if you're just on the bleachers watching, that doesn't really do anything. I do think that you just need to highlight what, you know, when people have forums, ask questions. I mean, when I'm talking about, like, debate forums, keep it focused on what it is that will help, you know, help families succeed. And one of the other things is, you know, everything talks about money, of course. You were talking about, oh, yeah, you know, I don't want to fund this thing. You know, Head Start, there's a lot of talk about making pre-K free. And parents. And there's lots of scientific studies to show that that's a good thing. Head Start, though, costs $10 billion, and it's about $10,000. That makes it about $10,000 per child. That's pretty expensive. One of the things I suggest is that not so much for pre-K kids, but for toddlers, that why don't you make a daycare, the first $10,000 a daycare provider earns, be tax-free.
That's a great idea.
It wouldn't cost the government a heck of a lot, but it wouldn't let lots of people find work.
That's right.
The number of, yeah.
Well, we have maybe a minute or two left, and I just want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Lance Hilsinger. He's the author of A Place of the Parent Inside Child Protective Services, and he's also the author of a new book that's coming out. Is your book already out, Build a Better Bridge? And where can we find your books?
The books are available, In Place the Parent is already available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Build a Better Bridge will be out in a couple of months.
Okay. And Paul has given me the heads up that we have 1 minute left. In 1 minute or so, can you tell me really quickly, do you see any other changes that's needed in the child welfare juvenile system that our listeners could take away today and say, I'm going to try to pay attention to this?
Well, I'm afraid it's not something that your listeners would have much control over. The thing that I want to see the system change is keep social workers from becoming bureaucrats. As I said, I was spending too much time in front of the computer screen and not in front of people. And there's just so much bureaucracy, and I want to make sure that other states don't follow California's example. It's very discouraging when you have to spend your day filling out forms and not trying to help people.
Yeah, and so you're saying be out in the field and see the children and speak with the children and watch the environment in which they live in. Because you're right, so many times you have to fill out more paperwork than you're spending time out in the field actually
helping
taking
that child.
And taking care of the children. I thank you for saying that, because I've actually had a lot of social workers that wanted to come on the program and talk about that issue, where there's so many cases per social worker that they don't have the time and the energy to invest in actually caring for the kids. But Lance, we want to thank you for calling in, and give us your website one more time, or how people can find your books, and I hope you can call in again in the future and continue the conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Again, the books are available, In Place of the Parent is available at Barnes & Noble. You just have to Google, In Place of the Parent, and it's also available on Amazon. Just search for the In Place of the Parent Inside Child Protective Services.
Okay, dear listeners.
Thank you very much again for having me.
Thank you, dear listeners. We'll be back with the second segment. See, we'll be right back after these commercials.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9. That's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7. Is that correct? 99.9 and 100.7. We're also heard online, Paul.
You got it right. Online at 1510 WWBC.com. And our AM signal actually goes from, on a good day, from Daytona down to Fort Pierce, even West Palm Beach.
Yes.
So AM travels much further than FM. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I didn't know. See, it's
just
fun fact.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know what? We're having such a good time on the show today because that was such a great guest, Lance Hilsinger, that called in.
I'm very informative.
Yeah, fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, whenever you find people who have a passion for their profession, they seem to make a really good guest. And he really cared about the foster children. And along the way, he's seen a lot with people with mental health issues and folks who don't have a good job. And you can tell he's doing his best to educate people as well.
Yes, and
what
and
do
try
we do on our
change.
Show, right?
We educate
people on our show. We give out valuable information. And I have to say, Sam, you know, we all learn from each other.
Yes.
We learn from life experience. We learn from history. We also learn from the people that came before us. And we learn by the power of forgiveness.
That's a big one.
Right? We learn. And a lot of people don't want to listen to other people, but I'm one of those people that if someone tells me something, I learn from it. I don't really take it the wrong way. And like he was saying, we see a lot of unplanned, unwanted pregnancies that then these children are adopted or fostered. But being a parent doesn't come with a handbook.
No.
No one has all the answers.
You're doing the best you can with what you have in most circumstances. And at least if you have, the big thing is it takes a village to raise a child. It really does. So your support system is going to always be a big factor. And most of the time from what he was describing, that support system is broken.
Yes.
In these situations that he's dealing with.
Right.
So it makes it a little harder. I come from literally a village that helped me raise my son.
Yeah.
And your family's the same thing. You're a big family unit.
Well, you know what? I had my children young. I had my children, my first two, at the age of 19 and 20. And it was hard. It was not easy coming to America with less than $10 in your pocket and cleaning houses and going back to school and didn't take anything from anyone. I didn't even know about the welfare system to apply, much less take anything.
A different family ethic, a different culture.
Well, I believe in we worked. I believe if you're able-bodied and you're able to work, you should work.
Absolutely.
And if you need assistance, that's fine. Well, that's why we pay taxes for social programs to help people, right? But I can't say it loud enough that children need to understand that parents do the best they can. And a lot of children, they don't know how to give their parents a break.
Yeah, right? They're angry.
They're angry. And then, and it we all need to talk about that sometime, you know? So our second segment is with a group that's calling in. It's called the Hold Spectrum Autism Foundation. And I met this lady, Sherry Singh, on Facebook, as usual. You know,
always.
Scoping out marketing. You have a degree in marketing. You know how that goes. And so I know people with autism. And I know how difficult it is for them to change their behaviors around certain people and certain things. And I thought this is going to be a good segment. So
I'm excited because I'm very pro early intervention is the key to helping children on the spectrum.
Yes.
And parental engagement.
That's right. And you know, a lot of people don't know that autism refers to a broad range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech and nonverbal communication.
And sensory issues.
Right. And people will look at folks and not know that they're autistic. So that's why I thought it'd be nice to have Sherry call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and talk with us a little bit about herself and the foundation she has and factors that influence and developments when people have autism. So, Sherry, thank you for calling in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, girl, you are so hard to get a hold of. I was like, I was looking at my calendar, and I'm like, oh, my God, she's supposed to call in on July 5th, and I don't have the information yet, and I worked yesterday, and I was like, I better find out if I, and I went through your website, and I found you through Facebook Messenger, and then here you are, so thank you.
Thank you. It just has been very hectic for me lately, especially with dealing with some situations with my son and now having a few small medical issues with him and trying to balance the nonprofit and my own business has been very time-consuming with everything for me.
Girl, that is what you call a work-life balance, and then you throw in a son in there with autism. It's tough. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how did you get involved with your nonprofit?
Well, I have a son. He's 35 years old. He has severe autism and Tourette syndrome. Approximately about 6 years ago, I decided that I want to make a difference because I had so many struggles that I was going through as a parent, trying to find help, reach out to other parents, finding an adult program. It was a struggle that so many other parents are going through and, you know, very little is being done about it. So I took it upon myself that I want to make those changes. And that's how my nonprofit came about.
And it must be challenging for you because in addition to that, you also run your business, you're a mom, you're trying your best to give back. How challenging is this for you? And do you have a lot of support from your family?
I do have support from my family. I wish I have a little bit more, but it's difficult because of so many challenges in our life. My husband takes care of his mom that, you know, have a lot of medical issues. They're elderly, mom and dad now. I'm taking care of my mom. She actually lives in Florida, Claremont, Florida. She has Alzheimer's and bedridden, so my brother helps me a lot with her, but financially, I take care of her. So there's a lot of different struggles that we do have in our life. And so I wish that, you know, family-wise, we're all able to do more, but it's been a difficult journey.
Well, it's also cultural because you're not sitting here in the studio with Samantha Nazario and I, but I could feel the aura around you, and you are a good human being. You are doing your best on this planet to impact the lives of the people that you love, and I thank you for that, and I wish there were more people like you that face the challenges when they come and step up to the plate, Sherry Singh.
Thank you for that. I tried my best, and I try to make good, you know, I try to carry good values and teach that value too. I have a daughter that's 1 year older than my son that has autism, and a son, younger son that's 30. I try to teach that value to my kids. So all I hope and pray is that a little bit of what I do rub off on my, you know, on my children. And if God, you know, is ready to take me anytime sooner, later on in life, that they will be there for their brother and, you know, step up to the plate. And hopefully, you know, I don't, my one wish is for him never to go to an elderly, I mean, an adult program where he has to be a residential program. So I'm working very hard to make sure financially and with other, with programs in place that that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, Sherry, we are very blessed here in Brevard County. I'm going to tell you to research an amazing place called Promise in Brevard. And it actually is independent living for people with disabilities. And it is amazing. And every parent's concern was, what happens to them when I'm gone? And this place is there for the purpose of them having a safe space to live in and be able to be independent in an environment where they're safe. So that's something you should definitely look into.
Yeah, just in case. But I know,
just in case.
I know how Sherry's thinking, because coming from the same culture like you, Sherry, I would say the same thing you said, is that you would prefer to have enough money, enough wealth accumulated, and have that cushion that if he does need care, that his sister and brother would continue your legacy if the time come and keep him at home where you feel in your heart he's better off.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's it is part of also a culture.
Yes.
A belief that I have. I own preschools and nursery, and even my younger babies, my little ones, I speak to the parents every day. I have a very good relationship with every parent that walks through my nursery door. We just celebrated 25 years in the nursery business. And every parent that walks through, I try to give the same advice to every single parent that walks through my door. I look at all of them as my own children, and I tell them, you know, the values that we instill in our kids is what's going to take them through the right path in life.
Absolutely, Sherry. How has autism affected your family's life?
Autism, to be honest, it has put a really big strain on our family life. Younger, my two kids are younger age. Did not understand why 90% of my time was consumed with their brother that has autism. My daughter and my son would say to me, "Mom, you have no time with us. You're always busy with Ralph." But as they got older and I got them more involved with him, and they started understanding that their brother is different, but at the same time, he is part of us, and they start accepting it. Things, you know, fell into place. There are days that, you know, it's very stressful. Like this morning, we are trying to plan a family vacation, but it's very difficult. We can never plan a family vacation, just the five of us. We always have to take someone with us who, one of his teachers or that worked with him for years that knows him, and it costs us thousands of dollars just to take someone with him that can get him on the plane and can sit there and make sure that he's well-behaved on a plane. And, you know, get him anywhere on a vacation. Even coming to Florida, it's very difficult. But I have to bring him to Florida. I have to bring his teacher with me. So financially, it's a very big burden. And family-wise, it took a lot of strain on me, even with my my marriage. There was a lot of ups and downs in our marriage, coming from married into an Indian culture. And Sita will tell you, being Caribbean and Indian, a lot of people think we are all Indian, but it's not true. They're two different worlds apart. It took a really big toll on me having my son. When my son was diagnosed with autism, all the blame from my in-laws, husband's side of the family, came to me saying that, you know, it was my fault. Him married out of the culture is the reason why he had a child with autism. So it took a toll on my life.
Yes. So, well, Sherry, that's why I was drawn to you when I saw you. I think I saw you on the, I don't know which program it was, but it said Sherry Singh. And I'm like, oh, she's Indian. I better contact her. And I know I tracked you down. But so when was your son diagnosed? And what I hear is there was a lot of resentment from the other children because of the time it's taken with him. So when was he diagnosed? Did you know right away when he was little? What were some of the signs and symptoms you saw and you said something is not right with this child.
My son was diagnosed when he was about 4 years old. Until he got his MMR shot, which I'm not blaming anything on the shot because we don't know if that's what caused it. He was saying, Mama, Dada, he had eye contact. Once he got that shot, he developed a very high fever, and he also developed a blood infection. He was admitted in the hospital for a few days. Once he came back home was when a few months after I started noticing the delayed, his speech were gone, his eye contact was gone. I started noticing different things. And for me, I was very lucky. I had made friends with a very well-known doctor, Dr. Lalita Mason, who's a medical and OBGYN doctor that's well-known in New Jersey. She became very good friends with me and was constantly coming around to my house, and she noticed the difference in him, and she was the one who referred me to the hospital in Newark, to get University Hospital, to get him to see a neurologist in the special needs department.
Yeah, because you know, like a lot of us, like in nursing school, we'd learn that the signs of autism usually appears by the age of 2 or 3. And people can notice the developmental stages that can appear late. You know, you're watching the child developing, and you're saying, you know, in the lay terms back home, I remember when something would happen with children, they would say, well, he's just a little slow.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, a lot of children back home had autism, but it was not diagnosed
or
right?
Improperly diagnosed.
Yeah, because, you know, how I don't, you know, back in the Caribbean, back in Trinidad, I know a lot of kids who were having behavioral symptoms. Or they were having issues with doing certain things specific, you know? Well, and people would say, well, that's just how he is. So a lot of these children went misdiagnosed and not treated, right?
My nephew came from New York with a mental retardation diagnosis. 2 months in a Brevard County school, my cousin had a medical on the spectrum diagnosis because that's what he was. He was never mentally retarded. He was on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Big difference.
That's right. So Sherry, so how did you deal with the diagnosis once you found out what it was? I guess you had to tell the other children as well to prepare them for how their brother would behave.
At that time, I only had my daughter that's a year older than my son. I remember the day that my son was diagnosed. There was, to me, in my memory, it was the worst day of my life. The doctor, when he told me, he said, Mrs. Singh, I need you to sit down. And I remembered I said to him, I don't want to sit down because I knew something was wrong. I said, whatever you're going to tell me standing up. And when he told me this was 34 years ago, he said, Ravinda has autism. I said, Ravinda has what? I remembered. And this is the honest truth. I actually punched the doctor in the stomach.
Oh, no. Girl.
I did. Well, it was a reaction. I don't know where it came from. I just my hand just hit the doctor in his stomach, and I just fell on the floor and started crying.
You lost control, because you know what it is? Because we come from a culture where everything is a stigma. If you have mental illness, it's a stigma. If you have autism, it's a stigma. If you have some developmental problem. And you're right, the family blames, it's a blame game too. Like, what caused this? And mothers have a difficult time, you know, coping.
As a mom, you feel like you failed. That. It's
yeah,
my fault.
You can't cope. So how did you cope with it? Did you also have to seek treatment for yourself mentally and emotionally?
Years later, yes. I end up having, I'm not sure, 6 or 8, I can't remember now, surgery actually from depression. I went through depression, the blaming of myself. My marriage fell apart. Thank God, me and my husband, now after 40 years, we're finally still together because I held on. The blame from everyone that it's my fault. You know, it was so difficult for me. Just an everyday life for me was full of tears. I mean, it was a struggle. It was a really big struggle, but I'm proud to say that struggle made me who I am today.
Yes. Right, and it also made you open a nonprofit to help other people through this trying times, such as what you went through. So tell us how you started a nonprofit and tell us a little bit about it.
I started 6 years ago, and you know, my main goal in the nonprofit is to make sure no child is left behind in a way where every child deserves the right to an equal education. My son, at the age of 34 when he was diagnosed, at the age of 4 when he was diagnosed, there was no proper any, there was very little out there. So that's one of the reasons why my son is so severe. What we have now, and in my program that I have, I offered, you know, early intervention to parents with kids that at early ages. And we see a big difference as these kids, you know, with early intervention and therapy compared to 35 years ago where we had nothing at that, you know, that we have now. So, you know, there's a big gap. And one of the biggest things that we have is that we don't have enough adult programs, not only in New Jersey, which we don't, and, you know, the county that I'm fighting for, but we also don't have throughout the world. I have been doing research. There's not enough. We do have some, and some good ones, yes, some places, but we don't have enough. And I feel that the adults that was born in let's go back all the way back to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 20th century, right? Those adults had very limited access to programs. And therapy as soon as they turn 21, some states is 18, some states are 22. They stop their everything, right? I feel like they're being cut off from the ability of able to learn anymore. And these are the ones that need that. Why stop it? Because we have to constantly keep their brains functioning in order for them. But my own son, he knows a few words and he knows few things, but if I don't repeat it with him every single day, after a while he will forget it, because that's how their brain functions. So that's my goal, is to, you know, get more of these programs open out there and
educate, and most important, educate people, because people with autism also exhibits signs and symptoms of depression. They have mental health challenges such as anxiety. Some of them have gastrointestinal diseases. And I think diagnosis is key. Education is power.
Early intervention.
And early intervention is what you're talking about. And through your nonprofit, you're encouraging that, which I think is wonderful. We need more people like you, Sherry. So give us a website for your nonprofit if somebody wanted to go on and learn more about autism and learn more about your nonprofit, the Whole Spectrum Autism Foundation.
It's www.thewholespectrumautismfoundation.org. Our website is actually going to be going through a brand new, we're getting a brand new website. Some of it is done, but the rest of it should be done in about a month. They're working on it right now. So everything is being
revamped. You're revamping it, I noticed. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Do you have any special events that you have coming up that would promote more people becoming aware of the Autism Foundation that you run?
We have a few events, local events we're running in the state of New Jersey, but the biggest one is we host every year. This year we expect it to be the biggest event. It's the gala for families and children and adults with autism, where we honor these families. This is one of my biggest events after COVID that I'm hoping will come out and shine. This year, I actually changed the whole event around. This year, we are going to shine the light and the spotlight on our families and children with autism. I am laying out the red carpet.
And where is it going to be? Tell us it's in Florida so we can attend.
Unfortunately, no, it's going to be in New Jersey, in Jersey City. It's going to be at the Ashford. The Ashford is hosting it for us. We are looking for athletes, any kind of movie star, newscaster, anyone to come out and sponsor and walk one of our special needs family down the red carpet.
What date? And what date is it?
September 9th.
Well, Samantha is busy looking up her calendar here to see if we could, if we can come up. You know, we've been wanting to come up and do something in New Jersey. This might just be it. So
it's
yeah,
perfect. I mean, I would love for you guys to attend. I am reaching out to, you know, a lot of. I'm even reaching out to our local army base to see if they can come out and salute our special needs. I'm working on a lot. I don't know what's going to happen yet, but we are putting a lot together into this event.
So it looks like September 9th is a Friday.
No, September 9th is a Thursday.
A Thursday night. Okay. Well, we'll see what we could do. That sounds fabulous. And so did
how
you...
How much are the tickets?
Yeah, how much are the tickets? We had somebody just ask, how much are the tickets?
The tickets are $100 each. You can also buy a ticket to sponsor or donate to sponsor a family. We are looking to bring 50 families of three or four to attend the event for free.
And most important, what kind of food and what kind of music? Because even though the children and the families are taking care of autistic children, you still want to have a good time and show them a good time. So what kind of music? Yeah. Is it soca? Is it chutney? Is it Indian? Is it Hispanic?
No, it's a mixed music. It's going to be mixed because we have mixed family, and I believe in multiculture.
Amazing. So,
and the food?
The food is the Ashford, the guy that owns the Ashford, Kenny Ashford. It's really, he did this event for us, right before COVID, twice before, and he did a great job. So we are leaving the menu up to the Ashford. The city of Jersey City is working very closely. My mayor, Mayor Steve Fulham, he has stepped up the plate.
Well, Sherry Singh, I tell you what, we are going to, Samantha and I will put all this on our website. We'll have Ellen take care of that. And it was wonderful speaking with you and knowing all that you're doing. And we are going to do our darnest best to see if we can come up for this event and support you. Give us something to do if we have the time off. Thank you for calling in. Thanks to Lance Hilsinger for calling in. Thank you, Samantha, for hosting.
Always a pleasure.
Paul, thank you. And Sherry, I'll catch up with you on Facebook Messenger, or I'll email you details what we can do to help.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll need more Sherry Sings.
Yes, we do. A lot more.
Sounds like a fun event. We could send some of our friends who live in New Jersey.
That's
the preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.